Welcome to episode 144, which is a girl take the lead soundbite. And a soundbite is a shorter episode which builds on a topic that we've covered previously, like our episode today, or a quick inspiration. And I'm your host, Yo Kenny. In our previous episode with Juliana Newland, we talked about the importance of humor in leadership. And I thought we could review our second episode, which was over 2 years ago, with my sister-in-law, Andrea Canny, and neurohumorist, Karen Buxman. Here were some key points we made in that episode, along with having a lot of fun and laughing our way through it. One thing was the benefits of humor to enhance approachability and trust. Humor as a tool or weapon. Are people born funny? Leading with humor. When humor is appropriate, what are some of the generational differences? The key takeaway from that episode was we can practice humor by choice, not by chance, by immersing ourselves in observing people, understanding what people see as funny, which is shaped by our socialization and makes for generational differences being very real. We can then experiment with humor and eventually it can become very natural. Karen also covered some of the science and understanding laughter's impact on the brain and body. Laughter triggers the release of endorphins, the body's feel-good chemicals, promoting an overall sense of well-being. It was a great episode, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes in case you'd like to listen. Since recording that episode, I thought we could take another look at humor and leadership and go a little deeper into the topic. I found a great website called howstuffworks.com with a series of articles about laughter written by Marshall Brain. What an author's name, right? For a science website?
Oh, yeah.
First, let's start by mentioning that laughter is not the same as humor. Laughter is a physiological response to humor. Laughter consists of two parts, a set of gestures and the production of a sound. When we laugh, the brain pressures us to conduct both those activities simultaneously. When we laugh heartily, changes occur in many parts of the body, even the arm, leg, and trunk muscles. Did you know that there are 15 facial muscles that must contract and stimulate when we laugh? Our respiratory system and even tear ducts are activated so that while the mouth is opening and closing and the struggle for oxygen intake continues, the face becomes moist and often red or even purple. The noises that usually accompany this bizarre behavior range from sedate giggles or to some very boisterous sounds. Behavioral neurobiologist and pioneering laughter research Robert Provane suggests that humans have a detector that responds to laughter by triggering other neural circuits in the brain, which in turn generates more laughter. This explains why laughter is so contagious. So why do we laugh? Philosopher John Morrell believes that the first human laughter may have begun as a gesture of shared relief at the passing of danger. And since the relaxation that results from a bout of laughter inhibits the biological flight or fight response, laughter may indicate trust in one's companions. Many researchers believe that the purpose of laughter is related to making and strengthening human connections. Laughter occurs when people are comfortable with one another, when they feel open and free. And the more laughter there is, the more bonding occurs within a group. Studies have also found that dominant individuals, the boss, the tribal chief, or the family patriarch, use humor more than their subordinates. If you've often thought that everyone in your office laughs when the boss laughs, you're very perceptive. In such cases, controlling the laughter of a group becomes a way of exercising power by controlling the emotional climate of the group. So laughter, like much human behavior, must have evolved to change the behavior of others. For example, in an embarrassing or threatening situation, laughter may serve as a conciliatory gesture or as a way to deflect anger. If the threatening person joins the laughter, the risk of confrontation may lessen. Studies have also confirmed the theory that people are 30 times more likely to laugh in social settings than they are when they are alone. So what about the brain? During an experiment, researchers observed the following activities. The left side of the cortex analyzes the words and the structure of the joke. The brain's large frontal lobe, which is involved in social emotional responses, becomes very active. The right hemisphere of the cortex carries out the intellectual analysis required to get the joke. Brainwave activity then spreads to the sensory processing area of the occipital lobe, the area on the back of the head that contains the cells that process visual signals. Stimulation of the motor sections evoke physical responses to the joke. This is different from what happens with emotional responses. Emotional responses appear to be confined to specific areas of the brain, while laughter seems to be produced via a circuit that runs through many regions of the brain. So, what do we see as funny? Laughter is triggered when we find something humorous. And there are three traditional theories about what we find humorous. The incongruity theory suggests that humor arises when logic and familiarity are replaced by things that don't normally go together. Researcher Tom Vitek says a joke becomes funny when we expect one outcome and another happens. When a joke begins, our minds and bodies are already anticipating what's going to happen and how it's going to end. That anticipation takes the form of logic, thought intertwined with emotion, and it is influenced by our past experiences and our thought processes. When the joke goes in an unexpected direction, our thoughts and emotions suddenly have to switch gears. We now have new emotions backing up a different line of thought. In other words, we experience two incompatible thoughts and emotions simultaneously. We experience this incongruity between the different parts of the joke as humorous. So after reading that, I understand now why I laugh like crazy when I see a parrot dancing to Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. I'm going to have a link to that in the show notes just so you don't miss seeing that. The superiority theory comes into play when we laugh at jokes that focus on someone else's mistakes, stupidity, or misfortune. We feel superior to that person, experience a certain detachment from the situation, and so are able to laugh at it. The relief theory is the basis for most movie makers, and they've used it effectively for a long time. In action films or thrillers where tension is high, the director uses comic relief at just the right times. He builds up the tension or suspense as much as possible and then breaks it down slightly with a side comment, enabling the viewer to relieve himself of pent-up emotion just so the movie can build it up again. Similarly, an actual story or situation creates tension within us. As we try to cope with two sets of emotions and thoughts, we need to release and laugh as a way of cleansing our system of the built-up tension and incongruity. Dr. Lisa Rosenberg, a doctor of philosophy, says that humor, especially dark humor, can help workers cope with stressful situations. She is quoted to say this: "The act of producing humor, of making a joke, gives a mental break and increases our objectivity in the face of overwhelming stress." What comes to mind for me about relief theory is the Bruce Willis role as John McClane in all the Die Hard movies. My favorite line was in the original one where he says, "Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs," in the air duct as he's being chased. I love that. Or when he says, "I know what a TV dinner feels," as he's crawling along. Or the, "Does it sound like I'm ordering a pizza?" when he's called for help. I love that movie. And I'll have all the links in the show notes in case you need a little laugh after you finish, of course, listening to this episode. Okay, so what's not funny? Experts say there are several obvious differences in people that affect the way we see things as humorous. The most significant, they say, seems to be age. Now, to test this out, I did a quick survey with two millennials and one Gen Zer who happened to be enjoying a corned beef cabbage dinner recently with me. I asked them if they had ever worked for someone that used humor in their work relationship, and all three said no. And when I explored it a bit more, they said that they would be uncomfortable being funny in case their bosses didn't think they were funny, and the performance appraisals could be negatively impacted. And when I asked about the boss making a joke, it was seen as not appropriate. And something tried at times at their expense. Perhaps that superiority was kicking in a way for the boss to establish power. I thought this was so interesting. So perhaps it's not an age thing, but a power thing. And perhaps the power of leadership is not making fun of others at their expense, but being the example of not taking things so seriously and laughing at ourselves. I do this all the time when I say out loud, "Oh, Yolanda," it's my way of not taking myself seriously. Probably an example of the incongruity theory that I'm just human and not a perfect being. There's a ton of articles on the topic of laughing at ourselves if you search LinkedIn, and I found one that said this: "Laughing at ourselves is powerful in three ways. One, it fosters a sense of belonging. When we can laugh freely together, we create a stronger bond. Two, it's disarming. Humor allows us to discuss topics that might otherwise be difficult. And three, it encourages vulnerability. Laughter eliminates the fear of looking foolish or failing, enabling us to be more powerful." And when I asked my younger generations over for dinner if they laughed and joked with friends outside of work, they all said, "Of course." That was how they let go of stress. And there's science to support this and the health benefits of reducing levels of certain stress hormones. In doing this, laughter provides a safety valve that shuts off the flow of stress hormones. These stress hormones suppress the immune system, increase the number of blood platelets, and raise blood pressure. When we're laughing, natural killer cells that destroy tumors and viruses increase, as do gamma interferon, T cells, which are a major part of the immune response, and B cells, which make disease-destroying antibodies. Laughter may lead to hiccuping and coughing, which clears the respiratory tract for dislodging mucus plugs. Laughter also increases the concentration of salivary immune globulin A, which defends against infectious organisms entering through the respiratory tract. What may surprise you even more is the fact that researchers estimate that laughing 100 times is equal to 10 minutes on the rowing machine or 15 minutes on an exercise bike. Laughing can also be a total body workout. Blood pressure is lowered, and there is an increase in vascular blood flow and in oxygenation of the blood, which further assists in healing. Laughter also gives our diaphragm and abdominal area, respiratory, facial, leg, and back muscles a workout. That's why we often feel exhausted after a long bout of laughter. I love this. It's a natural way to do a double crunch. Psychological benefits of humor are also quite amazing, according to doctors and nurses who are members of the American Association for Therapeutic Humor. People often store negative emotions such as anger, sadness, and fear rather than expressing them. And laughter provides a way for these emotions to be harmlessly released. Laughter is cathartic. That's why some people who are upset or stressed out go to a funny movie or catch a comedy club, or they can laugh at negative emotions and get them out of the way. In my case, it's a good laugh with the Jon Stewart episode on The Daily Show. Talk about showing us incongruity in life. He's masterful at it. Here are some tips the website gives us to help put more laughter in our life. 1, figure out what makes you laugh and do it, or read it or watch it more often. Surround yourself with funny people. Be with them every chance you get. Develop your own sense of humor. Maybe even take a class or learn how to be a better comic, or at least better joke teller at the next party. Be funny every chance you get, as long as it's not at someone else's expense. This seems like a good place to end today's episode. I need to go practice telling a joke so I can be more entertaining in my episodes. Anyone know a good one? Thank you for listening today. We sure hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. Join our public Facebook group, Girl Take the Lead, or visit our website, girltaketheleadpod.com. We also have a Girl Take the Lead YouTube channel where your subscription would be most appreciated. I hope you'll check out the show notes for this episode. I've got all the links to my sources, including the one of the dancing parrot. Oh my gosh, you've just got to listen to our next episode too, with my friends Peter and Sue. They are incredible coaches, and Peter recently wrote the book, Listening for Candor. In addition to being life partners for 25 years, Peter and Sue work together as part of the Williams Group team to bring trust-building skills to wealthy families. It is a must-listen-to episode. It'll help you navigate some of those tricky personal and professional relationships. I know you have. I have them too. So please come join us again. I've got so many great guests lined up. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.